The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Crisis over at the Emirates. New man Jurgen Klopp already making Arsenal look like winners. Meantime, Yaya Sanogo is like that factory next to White Hart Lane. People wanted them gone, but both were on fire this week. We round up the Champions League winners and losers. Salute City and Chelsea. Have a chuckle at the puny Bundesliga. Round up clever listeners' tweets and posts. And look forward to a bumper weekend of action around Europe and the Premier League, which has a Kim Kardashian-esque weekend with interest focusing around the rear end as four of the bottom five go head to head. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Wow, the atmosphere crackling here in Podland as we welcome Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Philippe Auclair.
Bonjour.
Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
And Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Part one is part Arsenal, Amy. Yes, listeners.
I sense so much IO below the line.
Yeah, no, we'll be careful because we do talk about Arsenal a lot, but I can't help it if they're in the Champions League. Can't help it if they got the win, the performance that everyone was crying out for from Usmanov down.
Can't help it if photographic evidence emerged that one of their supporters last night used a camera on a selfie stick to download footage of the game he was watching onto the iPad he was watching the game on while being at it.
That's pretty clever, Barry, but not as clever as a man who publicly backed Yaya Sanogo to break his, well, to basically to score in this game. Ian McIntosh, step forward.
In fairness, it was an accident. When I bet on Yaya Sanogo to score, I actually meant ever. But it paid off 75
Still,
seconds. I haven't celebrated a goal ages.
You only got like 3.5 to us.
It doesn't matter. It's not about the money. It's the way the soul soars.
Ian, isn't this in direct contravention of your usual kind of dynamic vis-a-vis making predictions?
Something's turned in the universe. Yeah. I appear to be able to use my powers for good.
Anyway, more on Arsenal getting this win against the 16th best team in the Bundesliga. How much of a new turning point, something turning in the universe from Arsenal's point of view, does this represent, Amy?
It was just sort of a calm evening, which I think was made certain hearts sore as far as Arsenal were concerned from Wenger's point of view. He was really relaxed and under no pressure. And, of course, people, I think, were turning up with Jurgen Klopp there. There was this obvious sense of looking at these two managers and wondering what was afoot potentially in months or years to come. But it was routine. I think in some ways Arsenal were quite lucky to be playing Dortmund last night. You know, there are certain times when things fall for you and you play either the right kind of team or the wrong kind of team at a moment when you really do or don't need it.
But the way that they handled their lead once they got it, have Arsenal learnt their lesson?
I don't think it's possible to use Borussia Dortmund as a means to come to a conclusion. I would say that the best two performances of Arsenal this season have both come in the Champions League and both against teams which honestly are going nowhere, i.e. Galatasaray, where Danny Welbeck looked like the world beater that Ian believes he is, and which he might become, we never know. And against the Borussia Dortmund side, honestly, when you saw them, you understood why they were where they are in the Bundesliga. But on the other hand, I was trying to remember, you know, the first group game against Borussia Dortmund, they looked as if there were 15 players in yellow on the pitch. Yesterday was not the case. There was no pressing, no intensity. Quite a few of their players seem to be carrying a little bit of timber as well. They don't look as sharp as they used to. They looked a bit lumpen, cumbersome. So I don't think it's a means to measure the progress made by Arsenal. The best you can say is that, given the conditions, the circumstances, the adversary, they performed extremely well, with in particular some players who've been a bit off colour recently. Thinking of players like Santi Cazorla, Aaron Ramsey doing well. Nacho Monreal actually having a very solid display at centre back. And for me, the most positive point of the night is Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was again absolutely superb. It's a bit like he's watching Alexis Sanchez, and it's like big brother, little brother. And Alexis is superb. We all know that. He's got his most productive start to a season of his career, including Udinese, including Barcelona. And the Ox seems to be completely liberated by that.
Well, Amy, you've got a set of fixtures there.
I have.
Arsenal, I believe, are at the Hawthorns this weekend. Do you think this new mood of euphoria will spill over into that clash?
Potentially, but Arsenal are a bit unpredictable. I mean, I think there was a moment when Emiliano Martinez, the young goalie who was making his first start at the Emirates, I thought it was quite an interesting situation in that there was some pressure going into the game, and there was a kind of a rookie at the back and also to an extent at the front with Sanogo. And had it gone wrong, I think they could have both been quite exposed. But Martinez made a really good save when it was 1-0. And I think if Dortmund had equalised then, you always feel with Arsenal that their confidence can be punctured really easily.
Right.
So the fact that they managed to, you know, stay with a clean sheet, I think was really vital for them.
Right. They will have Giroud back. Of course, he couldn't be registered because of his broken leg for the group stage, or he wasn't registered.
He wasn't registered. Yeah. Just wanted to add something about Sanogo. It's not my stat, it's Mr. Wilson's who unearthed it as we were looking through Yaya Sanogo's record over the years. And do you realize that before last night, he'd scored 11 goals for his club. Of these goals, 7 goals had come in a single week in February 2013 for Auxerre. He scored 7 goals.
Wow.
Yeah, during that single week. Which is quite extraordinary.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it?
Does this mean we can expect more? He's injured now, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, good
He's
point.
Injured.
Yeah, hamstring.
The goal machine is gone, so he'd be out for a few weeks with that.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Does Gunnarsaurus travel to away games?
Sadly, no.
All right. I'd like to think his goofy grin won't be so forced from in the wake of this.
He's been through a lot, Gunnarsaurus. Yeah. A lot. But Giroud will, I imagine, be travelling to this game. Yeah. Super. All right. And, from West Brom's point of view, they've lost their last two, haven't scored in either. They've got Jonas Olsen out for 5 weeks for Achilles surgery. Berahino got done for drink driving. But hang on, what's this? They played each other 3 times last season, a 1-1 draw at Hawthorns in the League Cup and in the Premier League, but Arsenal haven't lost in 8 against the Baggies. Numbers, statistics, Ian. What do they mean?
They mean nothing.
Oh, okay.
Nothing once they cross that white line. I'm absolutely with Amy that their confidence can be burst so quickly. I don't want to upset Arsenal fans on a good day. Not they should worry, because red wine won't show up on the shirt. But they are a very, very weak team at the moment mentally and in terms of numbers. So I wouldn't take anything at all.
You say
for
the
granted.
Numbers, of course, Jack Wilshere out, Chesney, who you mentioned Martinez replacing.
Arteta is
injured. Oh, yeah, Arteta as well.
Quite serious, apparently.
Oh, really?
And, it's the word that Wenger used, quite serious, a calf problem. Mm. And also Jack Wilshere, of course, will know this afternoon whether he's going to be operated on or not, with the likelihood is that, yes, he will have to be operated on, which means a few months on the sidelines as well.
And that's the ankle.
Yeah, and which is really literally the worst part of a footballer's anatomy, which can be hurt.
Really?
Yes, in terms of
footballing prowess.
In terms of the effect it has on your performance, even like a broken leg, you can come back and find your the same level. Ankle problems.
Right.
Diaby, for example, what's been keeping him on the sidelines for so long is repetitive ankle problems. And in the case of Wilshere, he has got obviously his body is not suited to the type of football he plays. He's quite fragile, particularly in the ankles. And he's incredibly, forceful. He tackles, he's very aggressive, and he pays the price for that. And he might have to alter his game to actually have a career which isn't stopped every few months by another injury.
Right.
Didn't someone unearth yesterday the nugget of information that Wilshere has been injured for almost half his senior career?
Really? Yeah.
And most of those injuries have been to his ankles.
Right. Marco van Basten, that's the way his career ended. So, untimely Lily. Right. Well, anyway, so those are some negatives for you Arsenal fans on in a week that saw you actually triumph in a must-win game. Impressive as the Arsenal performance was, nothing, frankly, to another Premier League side, Liverpool, who got a point away to the second-best team in Bulgaria. This display can change our season, said a proud Brendan Rodgers afterwards, Barry.
Yeah, Brendan. I mean, Ricky Lambert as well said, we've answered our critics from last Sunday, and he didn't explain exactly how drawing against a team I would imagine most Liverpool fans had never heard of 3 months ago.
Had you?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Had you?
I hadn't.
Exactly.
No. Mm. He didn't explain exactly how failing to beat a team that I would imagine most Liverpool fans, I certainly hadn't heard of 3 months ago, does answer their critics.
Mm. So much they, answer them as agree with them.
Well, Simon Mignolet had another shocker. They conceded a lead. I mean, it didn't make a huge amount of difference whether they won the game or drew. Their win over Ludogorets at home was thoroughly unconvincing, and they were pretty unconvincing again last night.
Mm. Although, I mean, Ludogorets had beaten Basel at home, and they also gave Real Madrid a bit of a scare, and they were great in that penalty shootout earlier on to get into the Champions League. So they're not a total pushover.
No, I'm not suggesting they're a total pushover, but the fact of the matter is, pretty much none of us had ever heard of
them. Well, indeed not. The group now looks like this. Real Madrid having beaten Basel to get their 15th straight victory, which I think is a record. Anyway, now Real Madrid obviously massively on top. Basel need a point from their visit to Anfield in a fortnight's time.
Ooh. One thing about Liverpool last night, even though I only saw the bleeding chunks of that game, but when they were leading 2-1, they had two gilt-edged chances for Lambert, then Gerrard, and then Sterling in a 1-1, and then conceded yet another goal from a set piece, their 13th this season, which is completely unacceptable. You know, we're not even in December. 13 goals from a set piece is just ludicrous.
Well, the interesting thing is...
It was ludicrous.
The interesting thing is they've conceded all those set pieces, and they're going to be facing Stoke this weekend. Ooh. And I say interesting because, as regular listeners know, because I say it every week, Stoke have scored fewer goals from set pieces than any other team in the Premier League.
So, despite being the tallest team in the Premier League.
Despite being the tallest, this just in.
The tallest team in the world.
Yeah. A quick word on Kolo Touré. Has he earned his place in the side for the visit of Stoke this weekend?
Well, he had a very good performance against Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. And many people were surprised that he actually lost his place after that. And the young Lovren seems to be in a very bad place at the moment. So, yes, I would imagine so.
Quick tweet on that subject. Michael K. Milligan saying, what do Lovren and the Titanic have in common? Both shouldn't have left Southampton. Ian.
Too soon.
You're going to be at Anfield on Saturday.
I am.
You expecting to see a little bit of Kolo in there?
You would have thought so, because Lovren looked so terrified against Crystal Palace that there really isn't much of a case to say that he should be in the team. I think Jamie Carragher was saying that a number of players looked like they needed to be left out for some time, perhaps even permanently. I think Lovren definitely leads the pack on that. The worry for Liverpool right now is that earlier on in the season you could say, well, they don't really know each other, they're getting used to each other, they're coping with losing Suarez. But we're 6 months on from Suarez playing his last game for the club. I think we're a little beyond that. What they look like now is a bad team playing badly.
I'm not sure totally go along with that. You're so far away from Suarez leaving. I think sometimes when you have a talismanic player, the effect that it has, even a bit subconsciously, on the rest of the team is enormous. If you're playing and you know you've got a great player on your team who you feel that he'll get you out of a hole or he'll help you through, I think players find that really relaxing. And if you don't have that in your team, or it's gone away when you were used to having it, it can just make you feel jittery. And affect your entire game, even in a way that you can't quite put your finger on.
Amy's saying that Arsenal basically haven't recovered since Dennis Bergkamp.
Well, that's pretty damn close to the truth, actually. But you could say, I mean, I've completely lost the train of thought.
Well, I do agree.
When you said Bergkamp, my mind, I went all giddy, you know.
Eyes welling up.
Yes.
Because the greatest thing about Suarez was, it wasn't so much how good he was at football, it was how hard he worked in every single minute of every game. Okay. But it's not like he just went and they're just coping with it. They spent an awful lot of money. They should have found a way to play at least to a basic competent standard.
They've lost Luis Suarez. They've also lost Dan Sturridge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You could argue they've lost Steven Gerrard.
Yeah.
Well, in many ways.
But I refuse to see this as ill fortune. I mean, they knew
and
Suarez
also
was
lost,
going
and I know that's,
over a year
a personal, that's a personal. That's a question I've been asking myself. They've also lost Daniel Agger, who was by far for me the best defender at the club. And I know there were extraneous reasons,
I think,
which explained the fact he went back to Denmark and so forth, but he's greatly missed.
The thing is, everyone was expecting them to take a step back. I mean, we sat here and said fourth, maybe even fifth this season, because you can't replace a player like Suarez. But they, you know, we're 12 games into the season. They're 4 points above the drop zone.
Yep.
That's not even a basic level of competence compared to what they were doing last season.
Are Stoke going to riff on their pain, Ian?
Oh, maybe.
Really? Are they?
Well, again, Liverpool, just like Arsenal, they're so capable of screwing up and shooting themselves in the toes that you just... You can't rule it out. Stoke are a very, very odd team at the moment, capable of great results and awful results. They've beaten Manchester City and Tottenham
lost at home
in
to
their
Burnley.
Own places and lost at home to Burnley. So they're a bit of a wild card, but there's, you know, Mignolet in the form he's in.
Britannia Stadium has always been regarded as something of a fortress, but this season there have been better on the road than they have been at home. So you'd have
Who
to
can
say
explain?
They're in with a good shout.
Yeah, all right. And that's it for part one.
The festive season is fast approaching, so this year, while you're busy buying gifts for friends and family, why not treat yourself too? This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simple yet powerful all-in-one website building platform. With Squarespace, you can easily create your own website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. It's simple, and it'll be the one gift you know you won't want to return. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GUARDIAN to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Back we go through the mists of time to Tuesday night, Barry. Dateline Etihad as Man City take on scary Bayern Munich. And scary Bayern Munich, despite playing with only 10 men, they were 10 Bayern men, so they were still 2-1 up with 5 minutes to go. And then what happened?
As Sergio Aguero capitalised on two errors and won the game for Manchester City. Won it with the last kick of the game. They were pretty lucky, you have to say, because CSKA Moscow had earlier drawn their game with Roma with the last kick of the game. So that was the perfect result for City. And once again, they relied on Sergio Aguero to carry them.
Why did Bayern Munich turn into QPR for the final 5 minutes of this game?
It's difficult to say, really. Very uncharacteristic errors. Like Xavi Alonso was a standout player in the field, and a misplaced pass from him resulted in the Manchester City second goal, and then a boo-boo from Jerome Boateng, who may perhaps have been just giving his old club doing them a favour, throwing them a lifeline. But I suppose it's just lapses in concentration. Bayern Munich didn't actually need to win the game.
No.
They have the group won already, so...
Yeah, you know. All right, well, still...
They still managed to produce what I think was the best hour of football I've seen this season.
Really?
They were... I'm giddy again thinking about this demonstration.
Really?
It's extraordinary. It was extraordinary. Because also they were a bit under the cosh after, you know, Aguero scored that pen. And for 5-10 minutes, there was a lot of pressure for Manchester City. They dealt with that impeccably. And then they started to play this new football with 10 v 11. I've never seen it before, honestly. Never seen it at this level.
Really? Might they have been a bit tired from that? Because playing that well, particularly with a man with a disadvantage of a man...
Didn't look like that. I mean, it didn't look to me like they lost any sharpness because they were making the ball sing. And the way the placement of the players on the pitch, I don't know how Guardiola did that. Honestly, I would like to... I will watch it again and try to understand how you're capable of doing this.
Right.
To reconfigure a team completely and to have it play even better. It's just astounding.
Quick stat. Bundesliga teams this match day, 4 games, no wins, 4 losses, 2 goals scored, 11 conceded. Wow. Amy?
Well, I was speaking to a friend of mine last night who is quite an eminent observer of football in Germany, who was waxing so lyrical about Guardiola. I mean, we obviously all know what he's achieved, but he said that he just can't believe what he's doing with Bayern and the way that everybody knew what happened with Barcelona, and it was kind of this symbiotic thing between him and Barcelona. But to come to Bayern, he said, as the more he watches them and the more he sees them, the more intrigued he is by the way that he is constantly evolving their style. And he says very often from game to game they're playing, they've tweaked their tactics, everything's shifted slightly. And, you know, hard enough as it is anyway for opponents to know what on earth to do when they're generally facing Bayern, when they're in the mood, it's even more difficult because it's so unpredictable because they're just shifting all the time the way that they're playing to find these new ways to sort of kind of destroy generally who they're up against, which was what was so amazing for that hour until Sergio Aguero showed his incredible worth.
They don't rehearse, apparently, they don't rehearse tactical shapes, you know, like 4-3-3, 3-4-3, whatever. They rehearse zones. That they have got a kind of a basic grid, which would be 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, call it whatever you want. But the work they do is not based on how do we keep this shape, blah, blah. No, the work is where the ball is, there has to be this fluid interaction between the players, exactly like a chess grandmaster looks at the queen side or the king side. And then they are able to produce this supremacy in zonal supremacy by having a greater number of players having cleverer movements than anybody else. And it's so mysterious.
Why, indeed.
But when it works, it's honestly, I know I repeat myself, but it was the most beautiful hour of football I've seen this season.
Well, clever Man City then, because they beat them 3-2. Have some of that. And that means...
Weirdly, sorry, the atmosphere again. And while I think the ground was as near as makes no difference to being sold out, the atmosphere seems so flat again. And if it hadn't been for the Bayern fans who were making all the noise for basically 88 minutes, it would have been played in near silence.
Oof. Anyway, that means in the group that, of course, it all comes down to City's trip to Rome. If City draw 1-1 or better in Rome, they'll finish ahead of Roma in second place if Cesca lose to Bayern. But if Cesca beat Bayern, they'll end up in third place, City, with a 1-1 draw or better. And if Cesca draw with Bayern, that same result, 1-1, or those same results, 1-1 or better in Rome, means they'll finish behind Roma in fourth place. That's very confusing. Best not draw for either they or Roma, who, as you mentioned, Barry, ended up drawing a game that they basically handed back to a very not particularly impressive-looking Cesca Moscow. So a terrific free kick from Totti, which involved two Roma players dropping and that, to make their own. Totti whammed it in, and that was great. And then they basically just surrendered possession, and then right at the death, the 92nd minute, Strootman, who'd just come on, gave the ball away, and De Sanctis just stood and watched as this cross sailed into his own net. And lots of unhappiness there.
I think you'd be a bit hard on the keeper there, actually, to be honest.
Really?
I think
he
so.
Thought
I
don't so too. He said it's not my fault.
It was a freak goal. It was a cross.
But it was a cross that just sailed in without him doing anything about it.
Yeah, but I think he thought there were two players who looked like they were about to make contact, and he was anticipating it changing direction. Mm.
If any goalkeeper is to be criticised at that group, I would suggest Mr. Joe Hart, who has got away with murder again, because Sergio Aguero's heroics and the late drama, have completely deflected all attention away from the fact that he was completely responsible for Bayern Munich's first goal and largely culpable for their second.
The first one he spilled, what did he do with the second?
No, the first one was a free kick.
Oh, right, where he didn't
Took an inordinately long time to assemble his wall and then stood in the wrong place so that the ball was rolled into the corner of the goal he should have been minding. And then for the second, the ball was played over the top and his two defenders, Kompany and Mangala, made a bit of a hash of it, and he was caught in no man's land as Lewandowski sort of beat him, ironically enough, with his head and shoulders by shouldering the ball.
Lovely stuff. Anyway, for City now, it all comes down to that trip to Rome in a fortnight's time. City fans who'd like to know a little bit more about what awaits them there could do worse than tune in to another top game that's taking place this Sunday night in Rome when Roma take on Inter.
Where can I watch that game, James?
You know where, Ian. You know.
That will be at the end of the day when they've just watched their team at Southampton, no less.
Ah, yeah. Saints.
She's just consulting the handy fixture list.
Saints taking on Man City, who've only just conceded their first goal in 439 minutes in that 1-1 draw, surprisingly, Monday night against Aston Villa. Disappointing performance, that. But they still got a point. Hmm? And, of course, they didn't have European exertions during the week, so they'll be fresher. Do you fancy their chances here, Saints, against City?
Well, I mean, they've obviously been phenomenal so far this season. And I think you say a little bit underwhelming maybe at Villa Park, but I think Villa played quite well and Southampton weren't at their best, but recovered to not only get an away point, which is always a standard that you want to achieve away from home, but they possibly could have won it. I think they weren't that disappointed, really. No. I mean, obviously, it'd be lovely to win every game when you're on the crest of a wave, but they're still in pretty hot form, and I think it'll be a fantastic game against City.
Second in the table, of course, Southampton. Could Man City move past them with a win here? Yes, they could. If they were to get a win here, that would be huge news for the title race, particularly as it would come on Sunday after Chelsea lose away at Sunderland on Saturday, as they're going to do, Barry. No?
No, that won't happen.
Really?
No.
Surely all the warning signs were there this Tuesday when they when they took on Schalke.
It was ominous, really ominous stuff. Not just for the Premier League, but for Europe as well, in that kind of form.
Right.
you know, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Chelsea, and there's your semi-finals. They were absolutely outstanding. And this is a Schalke team that, well, Rafa here...
Don't count Atletico de Madrid out. Everybody seems to have forgotten about them, but they're doing very, very well in Europe. Thank you very much.
Ian?
Yeah, Schalke obviously underperforming at the moment, but they had just beaten Wolfsburg, who were the only team to be getting close to Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga, and they have got some good players.
Yeah. Rafa's not very positive about Di Matteo at Schalke so far.
Well, I think it's hard to be positive about anyone at Schalke given the turnover of managers. They change them like other people change socks. But this was a miserable performance from Schalke and absolutely excellent from Chelsea. It wasn't even a case of the home team being so bad they made Chelsea look good. Yep. Chelsea look so balanced in every department. I've never seen a goalkeeper settle into English football as easily as Thibaut Courtois. In fact, I don't think I've seen a goalkeeper as comfortable with crosses since David Seaman. He really just looks flawless at the moment, so that should curse him for the weekend. John Terry looks to be having his best season in absolutely ages. Eden Hazard is tackling back, as is Willian, so there's no gaps to exploit. And Diego Costa, had he not fallen over, would have scored one of his own. They just look really, really good.
And yet, Ian, and yet, do you know how many times Sunderland beat Chelsea at the Stadium of Light last season? Just last season? Twice. Once in the Premier League, once in the League Cup. And they're unbeaten in three, Sunderland.
It's not going to happen.
Including that 0-0 with the Elves. They shut Leicester down at the weekend, held them goalless.
Woo.
The one thing about Chelsea, because you know, everybody's been talking about Messi equaling, then passing the record of Raul, and then Ronaldo also scoring, blah, blah. There was also a quite a significant milestone in the career of somebody who played for Chelsea and scored on that night, who is Didier Drogba. When you think that Didier Drogba actually started at the highest level very, very late in his career, it's quite extraordinary that he scored the 50th goal of his European career at Schalke. That is really something else.
Certainly is. You mentioned Messi's record. Right after this, we'll get on to that. Other Champions League news. Oh, in Group F, PSG top of that. They had a 3-1 win over Ajax. Messi broke the Champions League total goals record with a hat-trick, a 4-0 win over Apple Nicosia. Barcelona are going to be home to Paris Saint-Germain in the final game to decide who takes the group. But interesting point somebody was posting actually about Messi. He broke the Barcelona all-time scoring record with a hat-trick against Granada. He broke the all-time Clasico scoring record with a hat-trick, of course, against Real Madrid. He broke the Champions League record this week with that hat-trick against Apple. And last weekend, he broke the La Liga all-time scoring record with a hat-trick against Sevilla. So he doesn't just break them. He smashes them and grinds their bones up for something. Now, elsewhere, Atletico Madrid in Group A beat Olympiacos 4-0. Juventus got a 2-0 win away at Malmo. They face each other for top spot in 2 weeks' time. Group C, wide open, although Benfica are now definitely out. Zenit with Andre Villas-Boas. He's looking butch these days, as you see. He's got a proper beard on, and his hair's short, and he's all hearty and gruff and Russian and stuff on the sidelines. I'm liking this new look, AVB. Anyway, they beat Benfica 1-0. Monaco won away at Bayer Leverkusen. You're not very happy.
It was horrible.
Horrible, yeah.
Monaco is a horrible team to watch. Absolutely. They're the jammiest team in the Champions League. Mm. How they beat Bayer Leverkusen twice is just incomprehensible.
All right.
They were absolutely battered in both games, but they got the 3 points.
Monaco at home too. AVB's sexy Zenit in the final game. Either side can win the group. In Group H, Porto 3-0 away to Bati Borisov. They've won that group. Shakhtar is through as well, despite losing at home to Bilbao. Anyway, here's Vladimir Ulyanov. We could Football Weekly mention Cruzeiro wrapping up their second consecutive Brazilian title last Sunday. They got a shot winning the double on Wednesday if they can overturn a 2-0 deficit against their arch-rivals Atletico Mineiro in the second leg of the Copa do Brazil.
Except they didn't, because Atletico Mineiro won last night.
Oh, was that last night?
Yeah.
There you go, Vladimir. Job done. We're all over it. Hey, Valencia News. Here comes Alistair Ross, who says, why are DC Comics picking on poor old Valencia over their use of the bat signal when there's an actual team called Batman in the Turkish third division? Although, to be fair, it's actually named after the city of Batman, which contains within it Batman University. Who doesn't want a degree from Batman University? And frankly, who doesn't, continues Alistair Ross, want a pre-season friendly between Batman and this Estonian second-tier side, Hyperlink, which takes us to Joker. Batman v Joker. As he says, DC Comics legal department would have a field day. Alistair Ross also pointing out that the reason that they are having this court case with Valencia is because if they don't, a more serious, obvious, actual patent infringement in future would be weakened because they hadn't been inconsistent in enforcing the patent in the past. Thanks, Alistair.
The thing we didn't mention on Monday is that Valencia were there first. They started using the Bat insignia before DC Comics.
Batman, you know? Oh, Amy?
Just before that whole wonderful episode, when we briefly talked about the Atletico Mineiro Cruzeiro game, there was a phenomenal headline, which you may or may not have seen in the local paper on the day of this game, which was the great local rivals competing the Brazilian Cup final. And they basically had sort of several, you don't need to be a Brazilian speaker to know what should have been the main news stories, but the top half of the newspaper was several news stories with accompanying photographs, and every single headline was just blah 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 blah, and every single piece of text underneath was blah 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 blah. And then the second half of the front page was Cruzeiro against Atletico Mineiro and both their badges. It was just like,
oh, that's stonking.
Not interested in the news.
There you go, Barry. We're still in time for tomorrow's edition.
Well, that kind of thing happens in The Guardian occasionally as well, but not on purpose.
One final post. Kurt Nod says, astonished that you let Jonathan Wilson rant about Morocco messing up the Africa Cup of Nations without suggesting they've made a hash of it. Somebody was asking whether Sony cancelling their FIFA sponsorship was the beginning of all that. It's all beginning to crumble apart. Philippe, is it?
They didn't cancel it. They just won't renew. To the end. Yeah.
Other big company will step in.
There is word that Samsung has been lined up to take over, just as there is word that Qatar Airways is waiting to take over. Yes, it's quite funny. From Emirates.
Right.
But it is still very worrying for FIFA.
Hmm.
Thank God.
Good. All right. Excellent. Up next, it's part four, I think, with the very, very tight Premier League at both ends.
Discover how to play football like a pro with some help from The Secret Footballer's must-read new book. From tactics to fitness, pitch lingo to finances, The Guardian's man on the inside will tell you everything you need to know. And because you're a Football Weekly listener, you can save more than 40% on the all-new Secret Footballer's Guide to the Modern Game with our exclusive offer. Head to theguardian.com/bookshop and enter the code FOOTBALLER. And you'll get the book for just £7.49, saving over £5. Go to theguardian.com/bookshop and enter the code FOOTBALLER.
Wow, it is so tight in the Premier League. It is so tight, Ian. Do you know that between fourth place Man United, they're fourth, and tenth place Spurs, there's only 2 points. What the dillio?
It's been a very, very odd season. Mm. Possibly something to do with the World Cup and exhausted players coming back and teams in transition. But pretty much outside of Chelsea and Southampton, everyone's looked
definitely
a bit all over the place.
Burnley's troubles.
Yes. Burnley, of course, supplied 80% of the World Cup's players this summer.
Will Man U defend their position in the Champions League places against Hull this weekend?
Yeah, Manchester United look to have a little bit of their confidence back. That's back-to-back wins and good ones as well. Though, obviously, the first half against Arsenal, they were as bad as I've seen them in some time. They couldn't get anything going. But it doesn't matter when you're putting points on the board. And as for Hull, who I still think are a better team than their league table suggests, they will be very, very disappointed with themselves. They can try and blame
Gaston Ramirez?
Jan Vertonghen and the referee. But they will know that's a self-destructed game and that they lost their own points there.
Three defeats in a row.
At what point, Ian, will you stop saying that Hull are better than their results?
They slip beneath the waterline. Yeah,
they're down in League Two.
I still maintain. No, I think they seem to be very good in a lot of games that they don't win, which is a terrible habit.
1 point from the drop. Now, elsewhere, you've got Swansea, who dropped out of the Champions League positions. They're down in seventh now. They're hosting Crystal Palace, who, of course, are fresh from that terrific win against Liverpool. That was their first win, though, in five. Bolasie's on fire, and as his manager says, even he doesn't know what he's going to do next. And Swansea, they're seventh. They're above Arsenal, Liverpool, Everton and Spurs. They could go back up to fourth if results go their way. They didn't do badly against City either, didn't they? So you'd back Swansea here, would you, Ian?
It's a difficult one. Swansea, their position is mainly due to their very, very good start. They haven't actually won that many games since they took three from three. And if you've got Sigurdsson and Boney linking up, then they can pretty much bring anyone down. But Crystal Palace are such a hard team, and they don't really care about runs of form or spirit or anything like that. They seem sort of immune to that kind of thing. So I'm going to put that down as another draw for Swansea.
Sheepers creepers, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, who'd like to have a bang on West Ham Newcastle? Are Newcastle going to get a... Have they had five in a row? They have now, is it?
Yes.
So this would be six wins in a row if they could win. And of course...
Alan Pardew is shoo-in for manager of the month.
Yeah.
So which you'll be able to refer to when things go... pear-shaped a little bit later on in the season.
Wow. This is such an exciting game. So many narratives here. You've got Andy Carroll, Kevin Nolan, and Big Sam Allardyce against their former club. Are you excited by that, Philippe?
Not really, actually.
Oh, why not?
I don't know.
Two of the form teams. Newcastle have not conceded a single goal in those five wins. You've got to love their chances at Upton Park, surely, Amy.
Yeah, but West Ham are pretty... are pretty decent at home as well.
Well, but they lost Valencia and Sacco last weekend. Are they going to be back and fit and stuff?
That's exactly the question I was going to ask.
Do we know that? Listeners, if you know, well done. And basically, that would inform your opinion on what's going to happen, listener. If they're back, you think that West Ham are going to do okay. But if they're not back...
They have a fully armed and operational Andy Carroll. This is not to be sniffed at.
No, it
isn't. The brief
it?
Windows in which he is fit and able to play.
Is right. Fabrizio Colaccini fit? Because I think a large part of Newcastle's resurgent form is down to his individual resurgent form, because he was playing like a man who'd forgotten everything he knew about football and how to play it for a while, but he's got back into the swing of things. But I think there was a suggestion he might be injured.
Well, Dummett stepped in very well last weekend, and indeed that's been one of the stories at Newcastle, is how well the young'uns have come through. Producer Ben was at dinner the other night, and Alan Pardew was sitting two tables down, and he was looking really happy, says Producer Ben. Guess who was sitting on the table in between? Not on it.
Anton and Keith Lemon.
How did you know that, Ian?
Just wild guess. I don't know what's
That's
happening.
Spooky.
Ever since this Sonogo thing, just names flying into my head.
So they were sat. So Keith Lemon and Emma Bunton were sat at a table together.
Wow.
With other people as well. But imagine if they were to, I don't know, procreate. I mean,
which
genetically,
branch
that would
of
just
McDonald's was this?
Are we sure this isn't just Producer Ben's dream dinner?
Perhaps
party?
Perhaps it was. What top eatery then?
Keith Bunton. Lemon.
This was at the Colony Star Spotters. This was at the Colony Bar and Grill near Selfridges. So if you want to see Producer Ben masticating, that's the place to go. Monday, we'll see Spurs take on Everton. Barry, let's give Everton some love. Let's talk about their Europa League fixture, even though it hasn't been played yet.
Who are they playing?
Wolfsburg. They beat them 3-1 at home.
But Nicholas Bentner is on
Nicholas
fire.
Nicholas Bentner, he is, yep.
The man can't miss at the moment.
Yep.
I told you he'd come good.
Yep.
He will put Everton to the sword tonight, and most listeners will probably know what happened, which is why we don't really talk about the
Europa
League.
That's why we don't talk about it.
Just to address those people who were complaining about the contents of this pod before we'd even recorded it.
Exactly. You mentioned Bentner on fire, and of course that brings us on nicely to Spurs and their new stadium situation. I've just been told to be very careful, but the facts are that Spurs want to clear some land around the existing White Hart Lane, and they've managed to clear off all the other businesses except one, which they've tried to serve a compulsory purchase order on, and the guys are fighting it, and that building caught fire this week.
With severe damage to the first floor and 50% damage to the ground floor, I believe, which is very, very unfortunate.
There's a story of a similarly sort of very peculiar and mystical fire that happened at the Arsenal training ground many years ago when Arsene Wenger first arrived at Arsenal,
right.
And it was rubbish. They shared the facilities with the university, and he really couldn't stand it because they had to clear the pitches so the students could come and play, and it was pretty basic stuff. And anyway, there was this fire, and the following day it burnt down. So obviously the players who wanted to go to training, there was no training ground to go to get changed. So they all had a call. And Martin Keown tells the story of receiving this phone call in the morning going, "You can't come into the training ground. There's been a fire. It was arson." And of course Martin Keown goes, "Oh, I knew it would be him."
Oh, he's a joke, isn't he, Martin Keown? Right, what's going to happen between Spurs and Everton? Everton are unbeaten in five, but they will be tired because they've been playing in the Europa League on a Thursday night.
So we'll have
Spurs. Oh, Spurs will be as well, yeah.
Exactly.
And they're taking on Partizan Belgrade, I think.
Yeah, their record has been very poor, Spurs, after playing in the Europa League.
Mm.
Everton is looking...
Also, this will be on that tiny little pitch they have at White Hart Lane.
It's not that tiny.
Yeah.
That's rubbish.
It's too small for Adebayor.
No, he wasn't. He was complaining that he felt that there was a bad atmosphere.
You're right. It was Pochettino who was complaining about the size of the pitch.
I wonder what could be creating that bad atmosphere. You know, it couldn't possibly be a big useless lummox earning 170 grand a week and failing to hit cow's ass with a banjo week in, week out, could it?
You make a convincing case here. All right, let's then move on to that thing I was talking about at the start, the fact that you got four of the bottom five. Talk about how tight it is up at the top, but look at the bottom teams. Between, all right, QPR have got 8 points in last place, but then between Burnley, who are in 19th, got all the way up to the giddy heights of second last with that second straight win. Between them and and West Brom up in 13th, they're all within 3 points of each other. Ooh. And four of the bottom five face off this weekend. You've got Burnley looking for a third consecutive win. They're at home to Villa. While QPR take on Leicester. Goals ahoy. What do you think? Anybody?
Well, Villa have made moves to solve their goal-scoring crisis by sending Darren Bent on loan to Brighton, which ought to help. And I would have fancied Burnley to win that game.
Yeah.
Just from what I've seen of Villa, I've seen them play a few times, there's nothing. They're useless.
Right. I think it's been proven with Burnley when people were lamenting the loss of Danny Ings at the beginning of the season that, yes, they had a point, and he's made such a difference.
He certainly has.
Yeah, just with Burnley, you never ever got the sense that they were playing beneath themselves. They were always doing everything they should be. They were always putting everything into every performance. They just needed that little turning point, that little bit of belief. That said, I will disagree with Barry slightly on the fact that Villa actually showed an awful lot of intensity on Monday night, particularly in the way they pressed and countered, which is something that we know they can do. We just haven't seen it very often of late. In fact, had Wyman, who executed an extraordinary manoeuvre midway through the second half, had he not blazed the ball into the upper tier, it could have been very, very different.
Interesting to hear Wyman blazing after our Spurs story. Anyway, it was a bit of a shocking miss, but a lovely pass just before that.
Yeah,
too. Yeah. All right. So, but are we saying Burnley three straight wins? Let's. Yeah. What are we saying?
Villa are on the superb run of 2 points in 24.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not laughing. I'm just kind of, you know, surprised by that. I am laughing. Yeah. QPR Leicester. QPR bottom. They've had one win since September. Sandro's out until the new year with a medial knee ligament injury. And, Leicester got a point after losing four straight. But they haven't scored a goal since the 4th of October. Yikes, that's almost 2 months. What are they doing? That's quite impressive to go out 90 minutes week in, week out and not score a single goal.
They can play very, very cautiously. They tend to fill up the midfield and sort of hope the opposition don't score and then worry about scoring their own later. But, of course, the longer you do that and the longer you go, it becomes a sort of self-perpetuating thing. Though they are a very, very organised side. They've got to find the balance and they haven't got it yet.
Right. Talking about sides that don't score a goal for a long time, you remember that Aston Villa had to cancel their goal of the month competition in October. Sorry.
Well, there you go. That's you sorted then for the weekend, listener. Hope you enjoy all those terrific games that are coming up. Monday night, Amy, I hope you're all set for your appearance at the what's that?
Oh yeah. Oh no. I was looking for a Monday.
You're nominated, aren't you, for an FSF award? As are we, the big FSF awards. So glad they chose that acronym. Rolls off the tongue. The big awards in London. It's going to be an exciting night.
Are you going?
David Conn as well.
I will be going. David Conn.
Are you hosting?
I am hosting. Yeah.
I'm awarded. I'm nominated in the same category twice. I don't know which table to sit at. I'm torn.
Oh, really? Barry?
Not that I want to blow my own trumpet.
You hosted it yourself a couple of years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, then they went big time and got Jimbo in instead of me.
Come on, which table are you going to sit at?
So you got a choice in the TalkSport table.
Well, no matter where is it, I've got to offend somebody. Yep. So I might just sit in my own table. Mm.
All right.
I want Football Weekly to win. And Max is getting really upset because I've made it quite clear I want Football Weekly.
Why is
Weekly
that, Barry? Why do you want Football Weekly to win?
Because if the radio show on TalkSport wins, Johnny Vaughan will claim half the credit.
Because it's not actually your show that's nominated.
Well, it's kind of both our shows.
Right, okay.
But we're both claiming that it's specifically our show.
Right.
But I don't think either Johnny Vaughan or Max Rushton will be troubling you on Monday night.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, it's not too late.
It is too late, listeners.
It's too late. So have a super weekend, and we'll catch up with you Monday. Bye.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.